Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Along with Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus. We've got good news, bad news, and crazy news for conservatives, as we always do each weekday. And Jim, as usual, let's start with the good news. Two of the conservatives' favorites were on Fox News Sunday, and that was House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan unveiling at least a little bit of what he plans to have as the GOP budget blueprint, $4 trillion in cuts over the next 10 years. And also on the program, Marco Rubio, one of our favorites, also a big-time winner in the Florida Senate race last year, and just announcing last week that he's not about to vote for any extension in the debt limit unless some major concessions are made. Chris Wallace pressing him on this, saying basically, are you ready to default on America's loans and debts and all sorts of other things just to make a political point? And Rubio had this to say.
Well, I'm not voting for simply raising the debt limit unless, as I outlined in my op-ed, it's the last time we do it, and it's coupled with meaningful reforms that put us on a path towards fiscal sanity. Otherwise, all you are doing is guaranteeing default. So these guys that are going around saying, let's just simply raise the debt limit, we'll deal with these issues later, these issues have to be dealt with now.
The mainstream media, of course, on this, as well as all the liberals, Jim, are basically trying to paint this as a sky is falling situation. And it could be very serious, but I like the fact that Rubio says just because you do that doesn't mean our fiscal situation is any more stable. Somebody's got to say it, and he does a very good job of saying it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's kind of striking about this is how much the Republicans are effectively forcing the Democrats to say, look, it's not that bad. $1.5 trillion, $1.6 trillion this year really isn't something to worry about. We're up to about $14 trillion for total debt. And, you know, those are numbers that most Americans just, you know, their jaws drop at that. Now, one of the things I'd kind of like to see Republicans do is have – there are three bites at the apple coming up. The first one is this immediate budget impasse and the possibility of a government shutdown in a couple of days. There is the vote on the debt limit, and then there is the setting the budget for the coming fiscal year. I'd like to see GOP like at least partial wins on all of them. I think if you can get the Democrats to agree to $33 billion in the first one, that's not quite what we wanted to see. I remember there was talk of $100 billion. But if they can, you know, get that a decent amount in that one and two more with these two more bites at the apple, I could see Republicans feeling pretty good about this. And, you know, I just like the tone Rubio's taking with this whole thing, which is that, look, playing politics, look, this is the future of the country at stake. This is basically Godzilla smashing across the landscape and large majority of the people around trying to pretend it's not happening and ignore it. And, well, it's an obscure number. It's something we don't really spend a lot of time thinking about. I think the you know, not quite alarmist, but certainly the insistence of Republicans that it be dealt with now is good because it puts Democrats into the position of the status quo. And I'm not sure that's where they want to be at the current state of the country.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And I also think that there may be some who would quibble with the suggestion that the $30 billion would be a win for Republicans. It's certainly much better than where we were last year or anywhere in the last Congress or even really the last decade.
The floor of the debate is now the largest cut in government spending in any year.
That's
now,
true.
We can argue whether that's enough, but at least, you know, they get the ball somewhere.
Exactly. It's headed in the right direction, but the Republicans kind of set their own bar at $100 billion, and if they don't get there, there's obviously going to be a faction of their base that's going to be disappointed, but we'll see how disappointed when we see what happens later this week, if in fact there is a resolution to this, and Boehner's given every indication he has no intention of letting the government shut down, so obviously he's going to agree to something here. On to the bad martini now. Unfortunately, today, the award goes to South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham. He was on Face the Nation with Bob Schieffer on Sunday and was asked to react to the fact that all those UN personnel were killed, at least a couple of them beheaded, allegedly in response to the Florida pastor Terry Jones, who no one's got much regard for, burning the Koran instead of focusing mainly on those who actually cut people's heads off. They focused on the act of the guy who leads a congregation of about 30 people. Here's what Senator Graham had to say about free speech during a time of kinetic military action.
You know, I wish we could find some way to hold people accountable. Free speech is a great idea, but we're in a war. During World War II, you had limits on what you could say if it would inspire the enemy. So I look forward to working with Senator DeCarry and Reid and others to condemn this.
Two thoughts here, Jim. First of all, anytime someone looks forward to working with Senators Kerry and Reid, that raises immediate red flags. Secondly, Jim, freedom's great unless there's a crisis. So just, you know, we'll need to put that on the shelf from time to time just so you're all aware.
Greg, in World War II, did Americans say to each other, shh, you might inspire the Nazis?
That's right.
Don't say anything. If you say that dirty limerick about Hitler and Mussolini, that's going to inspire all the fascists. They're going to be even more motivated to fight because us coming to kill them isn't motivation enough already. I'd love to sit down with Lindsey Graham and say, all right, Mr. World War II historian, what limits did we put on the American people? Not over like security of troop movements and such, but over we don't want to inspire the enemy. They were lacking for motivation. They were lackadaisical with the bombing of Pearl Harbor until we really said something and got them fired up. One of the things that's kind of revealing about this is that the last time that Pastor Pyromaniac said he was going to toss the Quran into a pile of charcoal briquettes was everyone said, oh, isn't it terrible? We're paying attention to this. Why are we glamorizing this guy? Why are we glorifying this guy? Well, Greg, isn't it safe to say that almost no Americans even noticed that he did this until they started killing people in Afghanistan?
Yeah, this was
completely ignored by the mainstream media. So I think we can argue that media hype isn't really the problem here because, this guy just, he burns it. He puts it up on the internet and then somebody over in Pakistan and Afghanistan notices and they start hyping it up. So the idea that this is one of those moments where we kind of have to realize the limited power and authority we have over stuff like this. And this is, Graham and Reid kind of saying, well, we're Congress. We should do something about this. Maybe not. First of all, everything he's doing is as distasteful as it might be is protected by the First Amendment. And two, look, at the heart of this, the problem is that young men in Afghanistan and Pakistan are willing to burn somebody to death or kill somebody over the slightest provocation. They hear about something on the internet and they say, hey, let's go kill somebody. Most people in this world do not react that way. And if we look at it, that is the problem in the heart. Now, that is the heart of this problem. And the question is there much we can do about it? We can try to get the Pakistani schools better. We can try to get the Afghani schools better. But at the end, this is a cultural issue. And what we're dealing with is the easy trigger of murderous rage in young Islamic men in these poor countries. And, that's a problem that I think we have to realize that there is no simple, let's pass this bill and the problem will be solved.
Good work there, Senator Graham. Way to immediately think of reducing freedom as a result of this horrendous activity taken by our enemies over in Afghanistan. On to our crazy and bizarre martini now. And in case you haven't heard, President Obama is planning to run for re-election. I'm sure that shocks many of you. And on Friday, April Fool's Day, we played an ad from the National Republican Senatorial Committee as to why the president should be re-elected. I'm not sure the Republican ad was much worse. This is so bizarre. It's just basically a series of statements by Obama supporters around the country, a perfect breakdown demographically, of course. Here's just a couple of clips from the folks who spoke out. Here's a young guy who was too young to vote in 2008, and see what he has to say about the president's record since being elected.
I just saw the energy and hope that he had for this country. But even though I couldn't exactly vote at the time, I knew that someday I'd be able to help re-elect him, and that's what I plan on doing.
Yeah, he was going to be able to help re-elect him without knowing what he would do, so no record there. This lady in Colorado came the closest, but didn't quite get there either.
I think it needs to reflect the changes that we've seen in the last 2.5 years. Then we had an underdog senator. Nobody thought that he had a chance. And now he's the president.
Here I was expecting her to talk about health care reform and saving or creating jobs. But no, just the fact that Obama got elected was the great event of the last 2.5 years. And finally, here's a lady from Nevada who's asking a question I think all of us are asking.
There are so many things that are still on the table that need to be addressed. And we want them to be addressed by President Obama.
Actually, there are. And we've been asking President Obama to address them for 2.5 years. And when he does so very poorly. And other times, he just completely ignores them. So, Jim, not any sort of recount of the president's record to date. Certainly a strong basis for jumping off on the 2012 campaign.
Finally, an incumbent who doesn't want to sit back and run on his record. This was unusual. I mean, I suppose on the one hand, this is kind of an acknowledgement on the part of Team Obama that what worked in 08 isn't going to work this time. You didn't see much of Obama. You didn't see the crowds chanting, Obama, Obama. You didn't see the words hope and change. You really didn't see even much in terms of anything on any issues. As you mentioned, no healthcare. The words healthcare don't appear. And everything they say in terms of jobs and housing, that's all talking about future things. We want these things to happen. He's running on promises while he's still president of the United States, which is kind of quite striking. That young voter who said he was too young to vote in 2008, I suppose one of the reasons he has so much time to help out the Obama campaign is because unemployment amongst teenagers has been so high, anywhere from 20.8% peaking to 27.1%. As with regular unemployment, unemployment among teenagers has been higher for every month of the Obama presidency than it has for any month of Bush's presidency. So as much as they talk about the bad old days of 2.5 years ago, hey, they were a golden age compared to what we're going through now. And the other woman, that woman is saying that, you know, there are still a lot of issues left to be done. Look, you know, he's had 2.5 years. That first woman from Colorado who keeps talking about how what an underdog he was. Why are we strolling down memory lane? Greg, isn't this a re-election campaign? Isn't this something? Boy, think about election night 2008. Wasn't it awesome? Good times, good times. You know, nostalgia for hope and change is not going to, you know, be enough to get it done. At least I'm very doubtful of it. This was a very non-traditional announcement, and I think this is what you get when you really can't run on your record.
I think, Jim, if you want to spin it in a slightly positive way for the president, he is running on his record because the only thing he has accomplished in the 2.5 years is winning the election. Other than that, it's been a disastrous failure one after the other. So I guess focusing on those would not exactly be a smart reelection strategy. But I don't think you can keep doing that all the way to November of next year.
You know, I think our April Fool's endorsement on Friday was actually a better one than this one.
I think you're right. Jim, great start to the week. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Karembas of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.